Is there anybody that has any objections to that alteration?
Stop it.
No. All right. All right, item number one is discussion of upcoming resolution of adopting and approving our rules and procedures for city council meetings and public hearings for the city of Dunwoody. And you can find that on your third page. And then starting on page one.
Kent?
Yes.
Whose meetings were these modeled after? Who are we picking up here?
Brian?
The meetings were modeled after John's Creek.
Okay.
Most of these were taken, you had Sandy Springs and John's Creek modeled theirs after Sandy Springs. And then what we did, we took John's Creek and then had it based and then ran them off of DeKalb County's ordinances to make sure nothing was missing or changes that needed to be done.
Very good. Thanks.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions or comments on this particular resolution? Robert?
I'll just point out the resolution refers us to the actual rules and procedures. And I have a suggestion that I don't feel strongly about, but I'll make it just because I think it improves things a little bit. On page 4, section 13, it has us opening each city council meeting with an invocation, and I think we could skip that. I'm not sure we need to start our meetings with an invocation, so I'd suggest that we'd strike item number one off that list for the standard meeting.
Robert, anybody have any comments on Councilman Wittenstein's suggestion there to remove the invocation from our standard order of business?
I don't feel strongly one way or the other.
We'll note that. Thank you, Robert.
I do have another comment, though.
Yeah.
Are we done with that?
Yes.
Whereas public participation, let's go back to section 13. We have public comment at the end of every meeting. I feel that our citizens deserve public comment at the beginning of the meeting so that they can schedule their time so that they can show up and know exactly when they're going to comment instead of commenting 4 hours at the end of a meeting. So I would like to make public comment up to button number 5 after the minutes. We could limit the comments to maybe 3 minutes each, maximum time limit maybe 30 minutes. They could sign up in advance. At least then, if somebody had a burning issue, they could have comments at the beginning of the meeting and have an exact time, pretty much, of when they were going to comment.
The only issue with that is that they then don't get a chance to comment on the subject matter at the meeting. In other words, if we're talking about something and they want to comment about what we're talking about, we've taken away their opportunity to talk about the topic for, you know, one of the topics for the night. So I'm okay actually starting and ending with public comment. I mean, I'm okay with giving them a shot at the beginning and giving them another shot at the end. But I think you want them to be able, if they sit and listen to us talk about the budget.
I agree.
And they have priorities.
I would have no problem with the comment at the end, but I would prefer to have some sort of comment period, much like the DeKalb Board of Education, that they can sign up in advance. Our citizens can have a designated time exactly when they know when they're going to speak, versus 3-4 hours later, much like DeKalb counties.
All right. Does anybody have any thoughts on
that? Again, my suggestion was 3 minutes per speaker. If we want to maximize a certain amount of time, maybe 30 minutes, that would give a minimum of 10 speakers.
I think we do have that as, I think there's a 3-minute time limit per speaker and a 30-minute already in here. So really,
yeah, the 3 minutes. It's in page 6.
So what we're suggesting is adding an additional public comment.
Where would you put it, John?
I was thinking number 5, before the approval of the agenda.
After minutes?
I was thinking after minutes. Or, let me see, where is it again? Page 4. Next page. Again, it could come after the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay. Any additional discussion on that? All right. Good idea. Thank you. Councilman Hennigan. We will note to add that. An additional public speaking on their number 5 after the pledge. All right. Any other thoughts?
The agenda in section 14, one day before. Is that too short of a time period for the city council to review materials so that they're prepared for the meeting? You want to make it 2? Yes, I'd like it longer. 2 days.
48.
48 hours.
A little bit.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts moving that to 48 hours?
That was number 14.
Pre-A.
Pre-A. Yeah. It also then ties into section C, which is fairly in advance. The agenda must be made public. That's also the exact same 24 hours. I'd have to move that to be the same.
Council member, if I could speak on that.
Yes.
But I think what you probably will find is that once you have staff, that you'll actually come into, that there'll be a staff function that you would probably get it, say, if you're going to have a meeting on Monday night, that you would have it minimally by Thursday night, and that you will actually have a time frame that exceeds that by a great deal. I would suggest that you allow your staff to set that time frame way back beyond that 24 or 48 hours, but not to bind them so that you couldn't operate on something that there was a desperate need for to do it. But we can operate that way by policy, but rather than by resolution. That gives you a little more flexibility if you have to do something, but by policy, you should have it every Thursday before a Monday anyway, if that would satisfy your need.
That would satisfy my need if I could have something in an extra paragraph where it sort of says that. I would hate to have the policy reverted back to 24 hours, you know, at some point. But I mean,
they all work for you.
Yeah, right.
They're not gonna. If you tell them they need to have it by Thursday, they're gonna have it by Thursday. But you may want to do something that requires something inside that 24-hour period, 48-hour period that you needed to have, and then you would have bound yourself not to be able to do something that you wanted to exercise. The staff is going to do as you direct anyway.
Right.
And so I think that as long as you have a policy for staff that they need to ship by Thursday for Monday, you would exceed your 48 hours, you'd exceed your 24 hours, anything else.
I would be agreeable to that. Again, I'm looking for public participation and public notice.
Absolutely. And what would typically happen with staff is that once it would be sent to you, it would be posted if we're going to have an internet site or something like that. That nobody gets it before you get it, but when you get it, then they post it. So they would have that the public would have the information that they would know as you would kind of come forward.
So we're back 24 with the policy.
I'm comfortable with the 24 as law, as long as the policy is much greater than that.
So let me ask, not being a lawyer, Mr. Anderson, what's the can a policy, is it appropriate for that type of a policy to actually be in?
No, you would just make the policy and direct your staff to conform to the policy. That does not have to be in the actual resolution.
Okay. Could it be in the resolution?
Well, then it becomes law.
Okay.
It becomes law.
Right.
All right. Any other discussions?
So are we back to 24? So we agree?
I'm happy with 24. Okay. It gives us the flexibility as long as the policy allows.
Absolutely. All right, any additional comments on this resolution?
I guess I have a procedural question. Yes. We're not going to vote on this tonight because this is a work session.
That's
and
correct.
Not an official meeting. If this is presented on Wednesday at our first regular meeting, do we have to present it Wednesday and then vote on it the meeting after that, or can we present it and vote on it on Wednesday?
If it's a resolution, you can vote on the resolution on the day.
Okay.
Section 19, public comments. Is there a maximum time limit for public comment? Can it go for 24 hours straight if we had people lining up?
I understood we had there was a 30-minute. Mr. Anderson, can you address that?
I thought there was a 30-minute in there. It's not that there's definitely a 30-minute in there.
Well, I see a 3-minute each.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just asking a question.
Member, we've never run into a problem historically of hours of comment. But what I would suggest to you that there, because you have the ability to suspend the rules, and you could cut off comment by a 2/3 vote if you desire to, if it was going on and on and on and on, if you wanted to do that. If you were in such a situation that you were typically getting people going for hours and hours, you would probably want to go revisit that closure. But at this point in time, as you were discussing, and until we would find a problem, you may not want to close it off yet. But there's always a methodology to do it if a problem arose.
Okay. All right. Any thoughts or discussions on that? Do we want to leave it open-ended? We are going to have one at the beginning and the end, so.
Yeah, I think
we're
okay.
Are we all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, as long as we've got the opportunity to listen to public comment, as long as it feels like it's productive, and to move off that when it begins to get repetitive.
Definitely. 30 minutes.
That's fine. Yeah, so okay. Suggestion to limit 30 on the front, not on the back.
That would be acceptable to me. They would sign up for the first. My thinking was on the first one, they would sign up in advance.
And they'd take 10.
Yes.
Or the 30 minutes.
Right.
Okay.
We'll prepare it.
Thank you.
All right. Any additional discussion?
Meeting summary, section 20. I'd like everything to be available via the internet. When it's to be made public for inspection within 2 business days of the adjournment. I know at some point we will have a City of Dunwoody website, and my goal is to have pretty much everything accessible via the internet. Minutes, meeting summaries. This doesn't have to be by law, but I want to make sure that that's what I'm looking for in that section.
I think that's what the website would be used for.
I would hope so. Right. Yeah.
Probably
want to do that. Right. Direct the webmaster to build it that way.
Right. But and the minutes will start out in Word. Right.
Right. Absolutely. I agree.
So we don't have to worry that they won't be electronically.
Additional comment?
No.
All right. One. Move on to. Number 2 is the city seal.
I have a comment on the city seal. Since we put this together, I've gotten some better line art for the farmhouse. And I'd like to suggest that we take this line art out that's in the seal and insert the new line art. It's much better, not so much black. And one of our board members came up with this, Norm Bird, and I think it would present itself a little bit better. It's got a lot of dark in it, and I'd like to suggest that we change that, and it would be changed by Wednesday night.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Danny, does your art have shades of gray, or is it black and white?
It's black and white. The windows, of course, are black and white. It's similar. It's like this, except the porch has more detail on it.
Okay.
This detail is just all blacked out, and I think it would.
Again, the reason for the seal, you're impressing it into paper. You want yes or no. You don't want shades of gray.
I understand.
Yeah. I'm happy to look at this.
Yeah, right. You'll send it
is
around.
Is that any issue?
Pardon?
You'll send it around.
Yeah, I'm assuming we get the copy later.
Oh, yeah.
Transfer?
We have had a board meeting and authorized that, and I think I sent that around to everybody that the board had approved the use of this.
Well, I'm not actually talking about the board approval.
The copyright has not been established on this. It's in the process of being filed, the trademark on the farmhouse. But, I can certainly give you the documentation
that need to be sufficient, Cody.
All right, any other thoughts, discussion?
I do want to take a second to thank Debbie Smith for doing this one.
Absolutely.
She's a Dunwoody resident who called us a couple of months ago and said, what can I do to help? And we knew that one of the things we'd have to have once we became a city was a city seal, and she offered without any compensation to put a seal together, and I think she's done a nice job, and I appreciate her. I appreciate her doing it.
Nice idea, and we're running with the ideas.
Right. Glad
to be here. A little porch added. Okay, any other discussion on the seal? All right, item number three is discussion to have Dunwoody Crier as our official legal organ for the city, and it would be a resolution.
So moved.
Well, we can't move. Yeah, we can't vote tonight.
Just discussion.
My question is, what does the legal organ do? What,
right.
Help us understand, what does that mean to become the legal organ? How much money are we going to give the crier? When would we give the money? Help us just understand what
does it need to be done?
Right.
The legal organ, some notices, well, all notices require to be published. In local municipal organ, there are things that you're allowed to do in the local, and there are some that require to be in the county legal organ. So the majority of actual items that require to be published, such as zoning, requires to be done in the county legal organ. There are some that can be just done in the official organ of the crier, and that would be a question we have for Mr. Williams, how much he would actually charge us.
I would guess the standard rate.
I'm sure you could drop that a healthy discount. Many of the others are quite a flat rate that's much cheaper.
Do we
have a question on the Dunwoody Crier is a weekly newspaper.
That's good.
Would it be sufficient to publish that on the Crier's website? Crier.com, would that be sufficient, or would it have to go into a published paper?
Well, the notification, generally what you have to do is provide the notification. Depending on the item, some things need to be actually published, and some things don't. So the things that don't actually need to be published, you can publish, obviously, via the web. But many times, all you have to do is provide notification to that entity.
May I say?
Sure.
Everything we put in the paper goes on the internet, and we have now the capacity to be daily updates, anything you need in that regard.
My question had to do with being weekly. Do we, by picking an organ that's published weekly, do we put ourselves in any kind of time box where we have to get it published a certain amount of time in advance of an action, and if it takes 6 days to get out, I just don't know whether there's an issue with that or not.
The existing county organ is weekly.
Right.
There are some that do need to be published. Those, of course, we will do in the AJC because it's a daily.
Okay.
The ones that don't need publishing, you just require notification. It's just notified.
Okay.
Your organ would be enough.
Okay.
But if it does require actual publication, you have to go to a daily newspaper, and that's what would have to be done.
Okay.
What we would suggest is probably have two official organs named, and then use of the crier that's the desire to be the first. There will be some time-sensitive things that we may run into a problem on a weekly. There will be a one-time issue about that, I believe, probably starting December 1st as we try to run out our zoning. Because we have to follow the Zoning Procedures Act, and the question really becomes one of a timeline, and it's a very sensitive timeline. We'll try to work. We'll work the dates as best we can to be able to do it, because frankly, AJC is so much more expensive. You don't want to use it because of the expense.
Zoning has to be a
there will be times that we would have to. For the time sensitivity of trying to get something done, it doesn't occur often, but it will occur, and it probably will occur in the summer.
So does that mean we need to have two legal organs?
I would suggest that you would probably name a second also, and that might probably make that better.
All right. Discussion on that?
In accordance with the city mission of being transparent, I would hope that the City of Dunwoody website would have a legal notice section where it would be automatically posted no matter where, what other legal organ it would be in, so that the citizens can find all legal notices immediately at one place, one easy location, versus trying to find them at the various city, various newspapers and other legal organ locations.
Absolutely. Agreed. All right, any other thoughts? All right, moving on. Agenda item number four, in regards to the vision, values, and mission statement for the City of Dunwoody. And we'll open that up. I know Councilman Ross, he's led the team that put this together. So I will throw it to you, Mr. Ross, to give us your thoughts on it.
What we tried to do here was to put together a statement of the mission of Dunwoody that really included the shareholders, the stakeholders of the city, both from the resident standpoint as well as the business standpoint. And our mission statement, for those who are here and have not seen it, reads, "The mission of the City of Dunwoody is to provide the highest quality of life for those who live, work, or play in our community, and to foster an environment where business can prosper. We will serve our stakeholders in a transparent manner with resourceful, efficient, progressive, and professional leadership." And that's the mission of our City of Dunwoody. The vision statement also corresponds to that. It says, "The City of Dunwoody will provide quality services to our citizens and support the largest economic engine in the Southeast by planning in a careful and thoughtful manner. The City of Dunwoody will be inventive, transparent, and embrace responsible progress, which is tempered by our rich history and our desire to maintain a close but vibrant community atmosphere that values family life and entrepreneurial spirit. Dunwoody is a community where activities are centered around our families, our schools, our religious institutions, and our beautiful parks."
And the values goes on.
It goes on and
on.
I won't read the values.
But they're worth reading.
Or at least the highlights.
Right, yeah. Right. The values are worth reading. I thought they were particularly well done, and my hat's off to you and your group for doing it. I thought you did a super job.
Absolutely. Does anybody have any discussion on these?
Excellent job.
Yeah.
And by the way, the values, just for information, they were tied together so that they really correspond to the Code of Ethics. We're not going to talk about the Code of Ethics tonight, but we did develop a Code of Ethics for the City of Dunwoody that we will hopefully be able to consider, take up on Wednesday night at our meeting. The value statement is very much in line with that Code of Ethics, and it's a very strong Code of Ethics which meets not only the Georgia standards, but is consistent with other cities in the surrounding areas.
Any other thoughts or comments? All right, moving on to item number five. This is in regards to the ordinance providing for the continuation of ordinance and law during the transition period, legislatively established in the City of Dunwoody, and for the adoption of ordinances by the City of Dunwoody.
Again, my first question is, who do we model it after? Do we know that it's sound? Because obviously, we're not in a position to decide that.
This was modeled after Johns Creek, and we actually looked at Mills Creek.
Okay.
And Chatham Hill. This is what the other cities.
Okay. All right. Okay.
To your point, council member, the reality is that none of this has ever been challenged.
Okay.
And what you will find us doing is doing a belt and suspenders over and over again that we will continue to layer,
right,
because we don't know eventually what the courts will say. So you may see us doing things redundantly that you wonder why we're doing it. And it's because there is no case law on this, especially on the early starts. And it is very rough-hewn language that the legislature gave us for transition. But this is the most protective document that we've been able to think through over about 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
All right. Any additional questions? All right, agenda item number six, discussion of the proposed Chapter 1 general provisions of the City Code and Ordinance.
And I actually had a...
If you want to look at it.
No, I marked them on my sheet, and I just wanted to get to the right page number. My first comment is on page 7, which is Section 8, Paragraph B. And again, I don't know if this is a big deal. The text as it reads now, it says, "It shall be unlawful for any person to deface, mutilate, or in any other manner alter any ordinance book or minute book or any notice posted by the city for the benefit of the public or any other document or record for of the municipal government of the city." And the only piece in there that bothers me is this notice posted by the city for the benefit of the public. I want us to be careful what we outlaw, right? If somebody wants to take our poster and write fascist on it, right, that's defacing it. There's no argument about that. But you know what? We ought not be making that illegal if we can help it. And agreed, we don't want anybody destroying our ordinance books or any of our records. But I would suggest that we could take out the phrase, "or any notice posted by the city for the benefit of the public." You know, if somebody vandalizes something, you can always get them on vandalism. But I'm just a little worried that's overreaching, maybe.
And we'll throw it, point taken. Is that referring, Mr. Anderson, is it literally, as I read it, it looks like, it does look like it's defacing, I would read it as vandalism, is it?
Well, we have requirements to give notice and to make sure that they are public and people can read them. If it's vandalized to such a degree that someone cannot read the notice, you can make an argument we did not provide the proper notice, and therefore it should be illegal. Now, whether or not we actually prosecute that, we'll get to the solicitor, and it'll take guidance, of course, from the council. So, because there could be situations where such vandalism could occur to distort our notice, I would recommend that we keep it in there to be unlawful to discourage such behavior.
Where are these notices posted? Are they at City Hall? Are they grocery stores?
The door is open, but you generally post it outside the meeting notice. They can be posted elsewhere, but generally the notice for the meeting is outside the normal meeting place.
It's an official document of the city. Posting is actually an official document of the city, just like the minutes are. And it's and the clerk will sit and post. And when we go to City Hall, we'll have a place where the notice is posted out front, the notice of all the commissions are posted out front, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, this language consistent with other cities.
Well, and actually, I'm about to argue the other side of the same issue as I think about it. If we post it online and somebody comes in and hacks the site and changes the content,
I was thinking that.
And changes the time of the meeting or place of the meeting or erases the notice or I guess actually that could be, that could do some harm other than expressions of dissatisfaction with us, which people should feel free to do. So I guess I'll withdraw the comment there. I guess there are reasons why you might do that.
All right, any other thoughts on that?
I got a thought on the last, second, third to the last paragraph of that document, okay. which is Section 9L. And again, Brian, you help me here. The text as it reads right now says, "Any zoning ordinance or any ordinance regulating subdivisions or any ordinance regulating signs or any ordinance regulating building design standards," it doesn't list use permits. And I don't know if we want to include use permits in that list because they're not ordinances.
No, we can because it's no harm done. However, this was mainly designed because zoning has got special requirements and has to be done in special ways. So we want to make sure that we don't invalidate the current zoning laws because they got the special notice you have to the public meetings. So it's specifically designed to address that. We can put in permits and there's no harm or foul, but I don't see a reason to do so.
Unless there's some danger that we could be invalidating some use permits.
I don't have an issue with that.
Okay. So add to L use permit.
Okay.
Any other discussion? All right, we're going to move on to
I'll free your seat up, counsel.
Okay, we are on item number 7. And it's in regards to the same city code and ordinance, but chapter 2. Any discussion?
Yeah.
Councilman Hennigan?
Section 2, public records. I'd like to see public records available in an electronic format by the city should be made available electronically to the person requesting. The public shouldn't be forced to have public documents printed on paper when they were electronic to begin with, and then forced to pay for them 25 cents per page. So if they were electronic to begin with, I would hope that we would provide those documents electronically at little or no cost for duplication.
Okay. The could you point that section out for me again?
Actually, it's D. I was hoping there might be a section C.
Okay.
Page 1, chapter 2.
Okay.
Section 2.
Section 2.
Open these records. So you want to see.
Okay.
B says it has to prepare and provide the records requested. And I was hoping for electronic records in the city archive to be presented to the citizen electronically, if so available.
These are the kind of things, John, that we can direct our webmaster to do. This is what you're asking for, is simply a downloadable format.
Correct.
And that certainly could be directed by the webmaster without any kind of rules here. So I don't think we need to get into that kind of detail as to what we're going to do in directing people in their job descriptions.
You can do that by policy. You can just direct your service to the guy.
Yeah, I mean, the webmasters.
Okay, any other thoughts or discussions? Mr. Whitney?
You know, as a matter of practice, if somebody asks for a document, we ought to give it to them electronically if they want it electronically, and if it's in electronic form.
Right.
And it is, and I know where John's coming from. He and I together have probably submitted 500 open record requests to the county. And it is so frustrating to submit an open records request to the county and have them come back and say, this is 42 pages at 25 cents a page, when all they're going to do is print it. And if they could zip it up and email it to me or put it on my flash drive, I'll give them the flash drive to put it on so there's no cost at all associated with them conveying it to me. You know, I end up retyping a lot of that stuff in because I need to manipulate the numbers. So we want to, if we can do it electronically, and if the person receiving the records wants it electronically, we ought to do that. The only question is whether you have to legislate that,
right.
Okay. Or not.
And let me
I agree.
Throw it back to Mr. Anderson on advice as far as written word and policy in regards to this.
Well, I generally recommend keeping in the flexibility only as much so that you can direct it by policy, that you guys just mandate your staff to provide it as such. So I recommend leaving the council the most flexibility as possible. So I recommend that, of course, we're willing to do whatever you wish.
Additional discussion?
I'm happy to have flexibility, but I also want to serve the citizens in a fair and equitable manner.
What about the people that cannot do not have electronic means?
Then they can get it via paper.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Further down, I'll throw this out, and this one we may want to, as a council, we may decide how we want to do this. I noted this, but again, I see pros and cons both ways. Section 6, which is reimbursement and travel. It talks about expense reports needing to be submitted. And as the document reads right now, it requires original receipts documenting each expense must accompanying the expense form. And I was simply going to suggest that perhaps we require receipts for expenses over $10.
Threshold.
So that when you go to the drive-up window at McDonald's to, you know, for those of us, I mean, I'm one, and John and I both traveled an awful lot, and having to keep up with every little receipt becomes difficult. It's not impossible, but it does become difficult. So I was going to suggest that we put a $10 threshold in there, if that's okay with everybody.
All right. Any thought?
I would actually bump it up maybe to 20, because a lot of times, all that small stuff,
okay. I'm happy with 10. All right, that gets your cup of coffee, you know, in the drive-up window.
All right, let's say 10, where we're at. Any additional thoughts on that? All right. So that was section 6.
That's section 6. I got a comment in section 8.
Okay.
I only got a few more comments that we're not going to spend on this. Section 8A. It's on page 6.
Okay.
As it reads right now, it says, the Planning Commission serves at the pleasure of the mayor and the city council and may be removed by the mayor. And I was going to suggest that that read instead may be removed by the mayor with the consent of the council. So that since they serve at the pleasure of us as a group, that it would require the group to remove them. So that if somebody after Ken decides to take a heavy hand and say, you know, vote my way or you're off the planning commission, it's a little more difficult to do that. So that's the one change I'd suggest there.
No problem with that. Any good discussion? All right, so section 8A.
And my last comment on this document is in Article 6, which is on page 9. And this really is almost a question, although it might also lead to a change. Article 6, section 2A. It says, the functions of the city accountant and city treasurer shall be performed by the finance director. And my question is this, do they have to be performed by the finance director, or can it be somebody on the finance director's staff? In other words, is this a function of the department or a function of the person? And in which case, if it's the department, we might want to say, shall be performed by the finance director or a designee within the finance department under the direction of the finance director. And again, I don't know whether that matters or not.
Mr. Anderson,
legal clerk.
Okay. And the only reason I suggest that is because you may want to involve more than one person in the function, right? For checks and balances, to make sure that if you got one crook, it takes two crooks, right? So if you have one person doing one and somebody else doing the other.
Okay.
And that's it for me.
How about the change that to say that the finance director and the finance committee?
Do we have a finance committee?
You know, the finance director, you asked for the
clerk. Well, no, somebody on the staff, a staff person, right? An accountant or a treasurer, right? Somebody who's designated with that role in the finance department as an employee.
A finance or a staff member.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's what I was suggesting.
It's not much of a checks and balances.
Well, I mean, we do have an external, we have an internal audit and we have an external audit, but at least it's something so that if you wanted to split those up, you could. I'm not suggesting that we do, and in fact, in the beginning, we probably won't. We'll probably leave it all together, but it seemed like the ordinance ought to give us the ability to do that if we wanted it.
All right, so Mr. Anderson, you'll make the legally. Any other thoughts or discussion?
That's it for me. Nice job, Brian, I assume. Nice job.
Yes.
Could tell that a lot of work went into this. So
absolutely. Thank you very much.
It's actually the Women's Committee.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, next on the agenda is Rick Persicorn with CH2M.
Thank you.
planning on a slide presentation?
Well, I was told that comments would be more appropriate, so I left my computer and everything back there instead of PowerPoint.
Yeah, it would not.
Well, perhaps maybe right here so okay. I can see everybody and everyone can still be heard. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I won't grab your...
All right.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. It's a pleasure to be here with you this evening. My name is Rick Hirsikorn, and I'm the Director of Municipal Services for the company CH2M Hill. And I've been asked tonight to, as you know, to discuss with you the potential provision of general government services under a public-private partnership by a private contractor. And it's my pleasure to share some background information, discuss the process briefly that we've been through with the Citizens for Dunwoody up to this point, and then answer any questions that you might have. As you recall, in parallel to your cityhood election and referendum and your own campaigns, the Citizens for Dunwoody was formed and addressed many issues, one of which was the provision of governmental services. Looking at the option of a public-private partnership, in June, an RFP, a request for proposal, was issued to which we've responded. And that resulted in meetings where I believe 16 of the 16 companies received the RFP. We were the only one that responded, if I may.
Absolutely.
Didn't bring my copy tonight. We submitted a proposal that outlined our experience, our qualifications, our proposed project team, along with our detailed scope of services, a cost estimate, a startup schedule, and all the requested and required details. And to that end, we were selected for negotiation by the Citizens for Dunwoody Selection and Negotiation Committee, and we've worked under that process up to this point, again, in parallel with your cityhood referendum and with your own respective campaigns for office. To just summarize what's in our proposal, CH2M Hill is a global engineering, construction, and operations firm. And the initials CH2M Hill stand for the initials of our founding fathers. It's not a chemical formula. It stands for Cornell, Howland, Hayes, and Merrifield, and Claire Hill and Associates. We were formed in 1946 in Oregon. And since that time, we've grown into a firm providing full services across all the markets of engineering, construction, and operations. And this year, we'll have over $5 billion in total revenues, and our staff and our employees are in excess of 25,000 people. Our headquarters is in Denver, Colorado, and we're very pleased to once again in 2008 be named a Fortune 100 top place to work, which is a credit not only to the work and the value and the goals and ethics of our firm, but also to the fact that our employees confirm that at a very high rate when Fortune magazine does the random survey. That enables us to attract the very best employees that comprise our staff and all of our teams in all the places where we're fortunate to work. We also have a strong Georgia presence as well, with over 1,000 people, almost 1,100 people here in the state of Georgia. We serve over 70 communities around the state with various services. Right here in the metro area, we have over 300 people located in offices in Dunwoody, 300 in our CH2M Hill office in Sandy Springs, and then the OMI division, the Operations Management International Division, has another 300-plus people here at the cities where we provide complete municipal services, as well as the other communities around the state. So we have a very strong local presence here. We're not exactly a household name unless you're interested in the business that we're in, but we're very proud of the work that we do here in the state. And with regard to the municipal services, a relatively new business of providing complete outsourced governmental services to cities. We have been fortunate to receive several awards, one of them for Sandy Springs for innovation in governmental services from the National Committee on Public-Private Partnerships. Johns Creek recently received in the spring an innovation award for governmental services from the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And we've also been so recognized by the American Public Works Association for our work in Hinesville, Georgia, and other communities around the state. So again, not a household name, but a very well-established firm with a strong reputation for quality service here in Georgia. Now, of particular interest to you, of course, is our Municipal Services Division of OMI, or Operations Management International, which is the Operations Division of CH2M Hill. You're all familiar with Sandy Springs, Johns Creek, Milton, and Chattahoochee Hill Country. In each of those situations, we've been selected to help the new mayor and councils recently elected, just as you have been, prepare their cities, start them up, and provide the general governmental services for them. To this day, all four of those cities have been successfully started up and successfully operate as we speak right here. Each one with its own personality, its own mission, vision, values, goals, and expectations, but each one solidly operated in its own right. And in that regard, it's very important to understand that we know our place. You, the elected officials, represent your constituents. You're the ones who set the policy. And if we're selected, as we've been in the other four cities, to serve you in this capacity, then it's our job to implement the policies that you establish. We don't ever alter policy ourselves because that's not our place. It's basically acting as your staff to implement what you want as far as the quality of life for your citizens. With regard to startup, we have the four cities here in the metro Atlanta area, as well as two cities outside of Georgia that we've also helped start up and run. And there have been six cities and six complete successes up to this point. We've done that by assembling the right resources, working closely with the new city and the new city elected officials, their attorney, and their other staff. And we've developed a startup and transition plan that has over 300 steps in it, because right now the clock is ticking and you are elected as of December 1st. When you incorporate and become a city, you do have to provide the services to your citizens that you've all talked about and discussed with your citizens throughout the referendum and throughout your election campaigns. And our startup and transition plan and all the elements of it are fashioned to help you arrive at that goal on December 1st and to basically hit the ground running with a smoothly operating and transition city on your own away from DeKalb County. We are very capable of providing the resources in terms of facilities and the human capital and resource that's required. Also the funding, until you have your finances and your revenues start to be collected and come in, right now you're a little short on that because you're not an official city yet. We have the capability to handle that until you are capable of handling that, as we've done with each of the other cities. And we also provide you a guarantee with regard to risk. If you do select us and we negotiate a contract, it spells out very clearly what our responsibilities are. And in working with you, we balance the risk but take on all the risk that rightfully should be ours as far as providing the services and being sure that things get done the way that you expect them to be done and the way that your attorneys tell you, in accordance with Georgia law, the services should be accomplished. With regard to the scope, there's three basic areas that our services are divided into. The first one is administrative services, the second one is public works, and the third one is community development. And with your permission, I'll spend just a few minutes talking about each one of those services. Administrative services involves many different and varied services and approaches to taking care of items such as your city hall and the staff that's at your city hall, the human resources that's required to attend to the needs of your employees, and as you start up other departments to be sure that you have policies for operation, etc. Your IS and IT, information solutions, information technology is what we call it, along with GIS. There's been discussion already tonight about how you want to have electronic postings and electronic communication. We're all used to working at our respective businesses or companies or other institutions, and probably every one of us has gone in and gotten our computer and worked, but we're starting up from scratch right here, so that all has to be established for you and built in accordance with the recommendations of your task forces that have brought that forward, and that information gets turned over. We work to implement those recommendations. The call center is basically the nerve center of communication with the city. You will have employees who interface with the public out on the streets, if it's public works, or in City Hall face-to-face, or if they call City Hall looking for information or looking how to get something done, something accomplished. The call center is within the administrative services area and basically accepts the calls, finds out what the citizen is looking for, how to help that citizen if it's something that's related to some type of work, enters that right into the work order system. And in our other cities, we even ask the citizens at the time they call in with their issue, if it's not simply some simple information that could be provided, if it's actually a something that they've noted in the community that needs some work, we actually ask them if they'd like a call back. And we follow up with them once we know what the resolution for those items will be. The administrative services also includes all of your finance and accounting and the revenue collection, which again is the lifeblood of running your city responsibly, purchasing for all city functions. The issuing of business licenses, alcoholic beverage licenses, those licenses which have you know and certify who's doing business in your city and that they are officially licensed to do so. The taking care of your city hall, wherever that ends up being, any of the vehicles that are required for the other departments to do their work. And then another important aspect, which is court. In the other cities, we've helped them set up and actually run, from a service standpoint, the municipal court. Of course, you'll have your own judge or judges and solicitor, et cetera, but all of the staff support and the preparing of the dockets and running the court on whatever interval that you decide to do is also within administrative services. So it's a wide range of services. It's very... when it's very well integrated and aligned with your processes, make sure that basically your citizens receive the administrative related services they need without knowing how much work it is. Basically, it needs to be done smoothly so that everything is accomplished according to your wishes and your desires. Public Works deals with first transportation planning, which is looking at the different aspects of your roads and streets, from interfacing with the Georgia Department of Transportation and the Atlanta Regional Commission where necessary on potential grants and programs, to also working within your community if you need a new traffic signal or a stop sign or some traffic calming like speed humps or some type of issue like that. All of those require a methodology and a study to back up the need for new signals, etc. That's all part of transportation planning. It's not just a citizen request. There needs to be documentation validation behind it. Public Works also includes traffic services, different from transportation planning, which is taking care of your streets and roads and the traffic signals, being sure that they're working properly, being sure that they're synchronized. If sign related to public safety, like a stop sign or something like that, gets knocked down, being sure that that gets put back up quickly so that the safety of the public is taken care of. There's also other field services taking care of your right-of-ways and in whatever form and whatever schedule you obtain your parklands and your park areas, taking care of and maintaining those is what we refer to as field services. There's also another aspect of public works which is related to stormwater. And you have not only ditches and swales in some areas, but mainly storm drains and catch basins. You actually have federal requirements for being sure that those are cleaned, properly operating, and not discharging anything that would create a violation into the public waterways. And we provide those services under public works as well. And then, as I mentioned briefly before, although right now the exact disposition of your parks and your park system is not solidified, the operation of your parks in the other cities, we don't offer the classes, for instance, that or the programs that may be at the parks. But as we take care of the facilities, we also provide the service to make sure that not just the grounds, but any buildings that you have, and any programs are run, scheduled properly, the facilities are open, etc. And the council, through your city manager, will decide what programs to offer, and those are usually run by providers who do that on a fee-neutral basis for the citizens who take advantage of those programs. Community development involves planning and zoning, which is usually one of the services that attracts the most citizen participation. Again, deals with the development, economic development of your community. And we work with the city to be sure that the planning regulations are well known, that zoning cases are properly handled with your planning commission, with your design review board, with your Board of Zoning Appeals, and then brought to you for final disposition. And then in accordance with your zoning ordinance, we also provide permitting and inspection services. That is, if a citizen or a developer or other interest comes in with a permit application, we will review that permit application for conformance with your laws and ordinances, and after it is compliant, we'll issue the building permit. We'll provide the inspections throughout the construction and implementation of that project, and then the certificate of occupancy, or CO, so the homeowner or business or commercial interest can occupy the project. The other part of community development is that's active is code enforcement, and that's the compliance with your laws and ordinances as you, the city council and mayor and elected officials, want to see it reflected to best accomplish what your citizens would like to have as far as the physical quality of their community. And again, that is something that different communities look at differently, but it's very, very important for you to decide as a council, and then again, we implement what it is that you decide. The are there, before I go to the final part of this, are there any questions from council on any of these services or anything? Because I'm trying to optimize the time here, but not go through this too quickly.
Let me ask a couple of questions.
Yes, sir.
I'll be brief, I promise. You talked about maintaining the parks. Let me ask the question. That would include cleaning the bathrooms at these parks, you know, making sure that the trash cans get emptied, making sure that, you know, we've got a community theater at Brook Run. Presumably that includes, if people call to schedule it, having somebody they can schedule it with and who keeps a calendar of when it's booked and when it's available and all that kind of stuff. All of that would be included in what you've just talked about, yes?
Yes, sir. We, as I mentioned, the field services are what we call the cutting of the grass, the emptying of the trash cans, the physical maintenance of the facilities, and then the programming assistance is the latter part of what you said, making sure the programs are all scheduled properly, any facilities that are there opened up, closed properly, taken care of, and then when any kind of improvements are needed or anything, that comes through your city manager to you for discussion and some type of action.
Okay. Let me move from that, which I thought was pretty clearly part of your responsibility, to something that seems like it might be on the cusp, and just to try to get a sense of where the line gets drawn here. My son was playing ball at Dunwoody Seniors this afternoon, and there's a big pothole in the middle of the parking lot. I assume if you're taking care of public works, assuming the county doesn't fix it between now and December 1st, and who knows, it could happen.
I'm not here to comment on that, sir.
I assume that fixing a pothole in the parking lot would be part of your responsibility.
Yes, any city asset, whether it's a park, a city street, a sidewalk, whatever, if there is a problem such as a pothole, it's our responsibility to fix. Now, the way that happens is you're taking everything over on December 1st from DeKalb County as is. The difference between outsourcing, which is what you're talking about here and what we're talking about, and privatization, as many people mix the two terms up, is we're not taking over those assets for you. Those are still your assets. We're simply fixing and maintaining them. So as each of the cities gets set up, there is a response time. For instance, we will go around beginning day one looking for the potholes. And if you've driven in the other cities, you see the white spray paint around them. Those are potholes that are on the list to be fixed, and our crews go out and just systematically take care of those along with whatever comes up. That's a scheduled work. If we haven't seen it and somebody bumps it or something and damages a tire or something, and then they call that in, we have 24 hours, for instance, to fix that. There's a response time necessary for that, and that's our job to fix that and get out there and take care of it.
Okay. So let me follow up with one more nuance to that same thing.
Sure.
I also noticed that a bunch of the fencing at that park is in terrible shape. Posts are bent, fencing's come loose. Would your maintenance contract include doing things like repairing the fencing? In other words, I'm trying to figure out, that's not a capital improvement. We're not talking about, you know, redoing the ball field. Help me get a sense for where the line is between what's covered and what isn't.
Again, if it's a city asset, there is a line that's drawn between normal maintenance and a capital improvement. And so if the fence needed repair in a few places, that is typically part of what our contract is.
Okay.
If the light standard goes out and we find that it's the cable and it's very expensive cable to replace that's going through there, that's a permanent improvement, or if the entire fence needs to be replaced, that's usually defined as a capital improvement, and the repairs are made to make sure that it's safe, but then the city manager is notified that this really is something that needs some funds invested in it to repair it for a long-term basis. That's the same as with streets. The potholes are being fixed on a regular basis. Complete reconstruction of the street is a capital improvement.
Okay. Last question for now.
Sure.
You talked about community development and issuing of permits and inspections.
Mm-hmm.
And you just now talked about service levels and defining how long it takes to do stuff once it gets on the list. You and I have had this conversation, so I'm repaying it a little bit. Our citizen group, who looked at permits and inspections, thought that the level of service today provided by DeKalb in that area, and admittedly DeKalb doesn't do very much right, but one of the things they appear to do well is permits and inspections. There were a number of people on that task force who thought that DeKalb actually provides a little bit better responsiveness than what Sandy Springs and Johns Creek provide. And what I guess what I'm asking is, if we give you or contract with you to do the permits and inspections, can you sign up to provide the same level of service as the county? And if not, we maybe should look at having the county do that. I mean, we sort of promised everybody that it would be the same level of service or slightly better. And so this is one of those areas where I'm conflicted a little bit, because the county's got a very good reputation here. Help me feel better that we could give this service to you and we won't have those same people saying the same thing.
It's a very good question, and one that we faced in each of the cities where we work. And basically, we define the level of service in our contract with you. And the level of service that we provide in the other cities is reflective of what those city councils want to invest and pay for. We can provide any level of service that you desire. I think the one difference there, and again, we don't ever speak in terms of what the counties do or don't do. We speak in terms of what we would like to do for you in a more positive sense there. The one thing that we offer you, regardless of the level of service, is accountability for that. The concerns in the other cities, and I'm not talking about DeKalb here because I don't know DeKalb, and we're not working for you yet, if we do get the chance to serve you. But when there's an issue or when there's a priority that you need, in addition to just the normal process of doing business, we are your service provider. If something needs to be done more efficiently, more effectively, or there's something, for instance, a big project comes in and needs priority, and your city manager decides that's what you need, then you make that decision, and we're accountable to you for that. When you're with the county, I'm sure you could define that possibly in an IGA, but it was the situation in the other cities where they didn't feel like the county was as accountable to them as the city council for providing that service as we would be.
And I understand that. There's some advantage to having you work for us where the county doesn't work for us.
Correct.
But I guess what I'm saying is that when we sit down to review, we're going to get a contract from you at some point. And we're going to review that contract. And that's going to have the service levels in it? Is that true or not?
It can have the service levels in it, yes.
What I want to make sure of is that when we get the proposal for community development, that it includes a level of service that, to the best of your ability, matches the level of service that we get today from the county.
Yes, sir.
And recognizing that is perhaps a different level of service than what the other cities were dealing with Fulton. And so the level of service they get now may seem like nirvana to them, right? Because the thing they're comparing it against is very different. So I just want to make sure that when we get to the point of saying, here's how much it costs and here's what we're buying, that in that area, we agree that we want a level of service that's a little bit better. And in other words, we may be able to accept a level of service that's lower than some of those other cities, right?
Actually, what's been done in each of the other cities, as your attorney has explained to you with regard to the ordinances, is you usually begin with the same ordinances that DeKalb County would have
right.
for business continuity.
Right.
And what's occurred in the other cities is there's different levels of development. There's the residential development, and there's residential projects who will come in with the architect and engineer. There's people who will come in doing it themselves, and there's people who will come in with remodels or revisions to their existing house, and it may be literally on the back of a napkin. Okay. Then you have commercial developments in various degrees, and since Dunwoody has some of the largest businesses in the whole metro area, you could have large projects in that regard. And so what has occurred is that the other cities have, and it's with our staff facilitating and meeting with them regularly, we listen to the developers from all the different categories at the request of the city to find out what it is that they want in the way of service. And each one of those different categories began trying to provide the same level of service on a continuity basis, and each one of them has been modified as has been seen fit by the city manager or the council directing the city manager to say, you know, some of the developers would like to see this done differently, and as a council we believe in this or that, and that's what we've done. And so we pledge the same to you. We could set the service up to be sure that the different interests get the service that you expect them to have. And that's the only pledge that we can give to you. I can't comment on what's better, because we're not familiar with the service that's there right now. Okay.
Since we've got an audience here, our citizens, let me just make a comment or two about what I've heard from some of our leading developers, both on the commercial as well as the residential side, that the service in DeKalb County is not good. That oftentimes, when you submit a particular project, it gets lost. It takes weeks. Sometimes you have to resubmit it. And I'm hearing this both from the residential and the commercial side of this thing. So just so that our audience here don't think that we've got a utopia situation here with respect to DeKalb County. That's what I'm hearing from prominent builders in the community.
The one thing that I would just like to offer to the councilman to complete my response to you is that we're very pleased that we still receive more positive comments in our cities, unsolicited letters from developers or homeowners thanking us for the service. That's not to say that we don't have problems. We're human beings, and human beings bring in projects, and sometimes the communication isn't perfect at first meet. But when people don't have to write letters or emails and send them in with compliments on the service, we're pleased that we still have primarily positive comments over ones that aren't so positive. And so that's what I would offer you in conclusion on that. And I hope that that's responded to your question.
It has. We can move on. I don't want to belabor the point.
Well, that basically, without going through a one-hour PowerPoint presentation, which you've all been spared, as well as the citizens tonight, is the conclusion of most of the substance regarding the scope of services, et cetera. In summary, we offer and provide extensive local experience. We have four cities here in town with over 300 employees of ours, not counting the partners who work with us, who help us with some of the field services and other specialized services. The cities have been successfully operated, and not perfect, but successfully operated, and when an issue does come up, we're pleased to meet that issue head on and resolve that issue to the satisfaction of each of our valued clients. We have also been very pleased to be able to implement a certain degree of innovation into the government. Several of the things that you've talked about tonight as far as how you want to communicate with your constituents are things that we have been able to implement with our cities as far as award-winning, functional, hard-working websites and geographic information systems with maps available to the public. Leading-edge and innovative revenue capture programs that help the cities not just keep their costs down, but find new revenue sources to which they're entitled to help provide the services to their constituents. And then the thing that we believe differentiates us above all else is the high degree of customer service that we've provided. And yes, our Fulton County cities have told us that it was a low bar for us to move in on. But at the same time, we're pleased that our people show up every day, whether it's in City Hall or on the call center or out on the streets and parks of the city, showing the constituents that we're happy to be there. We're government employees that don't have an entitlement mentality, and we're happy to be working with you, checking our logo at the door, and providing the best possible services for each of our respective cities, because that's the only way that the elected officials want to keep us around and the way that they can succeed. And along with that, there are literally a million moving parts between now and December 1st. The startup and transition will set the tone for your entire city operation, and we've done that now successfully six different times. And so in conclusion, the benefits of looking at a public-private partnership and all of the aspects that are involved with that is that we do know how to do the startup, and along with that, the funding for the people and the other resources that are needed as far as facilities, equipment, etc. We have started up six other cities and several other departments by themselves outside of complete cities. We do take on the assumption of risk for the cost of service. Okay, we define the level of service. We go in and we say this is what we think it will be. If it requires some additional resources, we make good on that and provide you the service that you expect from us. We also have with that the ability to hire and pay for the staff who will be basically your government employees up until the December 1st and then after December 1st until your funding is fully in place. We also have the ongoing supply of resources and the reach back that a firm of international scale and 25,000 employees provides. There's times when you need experts and you need help and expertise in certain areas that even larger cities such as Sandy Springs can't afford to have those people on staff full time. We have those people in CH2M Hill, and we take advantage of them whenever it's advantageous for our city clients. The knowledge and experience of government and what it takes to run government, but how to do this. There had been no new cities before Sandy Springs started up in Georgia since Peachtree City in 1959. When we went looking for some of the revenues, there were people down at the state who had not been through the experience of saying, well, this is what you need to do to establish yourself to get this revenue source, et cetera. We've been through that with a proven plan and proven methodology. Hopefully, you and your citizens living right next door to Sandy Springs have seen that, again, we didn't, together as a partnership with Sandy Springs, didn't know everything we were going to face when they first asked us to work with them, or on December 1st at 12:01 a.m. when they opened the doors. But we've worked together. It's been a good partnership, and each thing that's come up, if it's a new issue, if it's some type of challenge, we've handled it together in a partnership, and the city has really been the beneficiary of that. We guarantee our performance. Again, if something is specified as needing to be done and it isn't done according to the expectations, and we work on how to do that, and we make sure that the service that you've asked for from us is provided. And so that on December 1st, in conclusion, when the sun comes up, that you're ready to operate your city and provide the services to your citizens. And we would be honored and privileged, if given the opportunity, to serve you in the capacity that we've served our other cities. And with that, I'll conclude what were intended to be brief comments and answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Principal. Any comments for Mr. Persicorn? Questions, John?
I'd just like to say I appreciate all the work that you've done on putting your proposal together, Rick. I think your organization is shown to be professional, and from my point of view, and I think the whole council's point of view, we appreciate all the work that you've done.
John?
I've heard the presentation three times, and I have
hope it was consistent.
It was. When does the RFP expire? When does a contract need to be in place? Does the contract need to be in place immediately, or can be in place 3-4 months from now?
Well, we would like to suggest to council, if you decide that you would like a public-private partnership and to utilize our services, is that we would immediately provide you with what we call a memorandum of understanding. That would be a very short, brief, and concise document that we would negotiate with your city attorney that would say both parties intend to work together. It would have the basic elements of what's in the proposal that we intend to work towards this, and it would be basically in effect until January 1st, or an actual detailed contract is negotiated and put in place, whichever happens sooner. Our preference, of course, would be, such as when we started up the city in Louisiana, we had our contract in place the Sunday night before the Monday morning that they started up. But since this has been a very detailed and thorough process, as you know, we don't have, but between us now, not knowing if you want to take advantage of our services, a detailed contract to hand you, we are prepared to provide your city attorney with an MOU and what we would call a term sheet, which would be for your benefit, which is a several-page but concise document outlining the high points of each section of the contract. Not all the details of that, but we would provide you with a memorandum of understanding and a term sheet that could then come from your attorney to you. We would like the contract in place as soon as practical, but again, the MOU, once you vote on it and you accept it and you sign it, that serves in the interim until we have that contract. The other cities have all had their contracts in place, for instance, Sandy Springs, and then a year later, Johns Creek and Milton, all in the month of December prior to January 1st. Bless you.
I understand that, we want to have a contract in place, preferably before the start of December 1st. The RFP, does it expire, and can we make a decision and push it out to January 30th? I'm not familiar with the RFP in the sense of the expiration date.
Well, there is no expiration date, but this is been priced for instance, for the first year of service and the second year of service as if you enter into the contract now. If there are some extenuating circumstances that require us to not sign a contract until January 30th, then before the MOU expires, we would expect to discuss that with your city attorney. To answer your question directly, there isn't an expiration date, but it's with the expectation that this would be fiscal year 09 funding for the price that's in there.
Okay. I only have one more question. A few minutes ago, you just stated that you were going to spare the community the details of the contract. I was hoping for more details tonight. In fact, when the agenda came out, I was hoping for your presentation to be provided to the commissioners, to the board, prior to your presentation, so that it could be posted to a website, so that the public could see the specific details. Mm-hmm. And can something like that be done soon? Is this now a public document? I signed a non-disclosure form for this book. And I think the citizens, if we go with this proposal, should see the details which are in this book, or the presentation which you were thinking of giving earlier this evening.
Actually, the position that we have taken on our proposal is that it does contain proprietary information. It does contain details of our business that we've developed. And even though there have been multiple copies of that out, it was submitted to the Citizens for Dunwoody, the selection negotiation committee. It was not submitted to you as the council. You were not elected yet.
Right.
It's been our position that that these are not public information, but the contract that you negotiate with us and all the details once you vote on it is a public document. So that's been our position. That is our preference, that until there's some decision made, this is a proprietary document, and it states that in there. And it, again, that's not to be stubborn. That's just a business viewpoint that we would hope that you would understand.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
A general question for Mr. Anderson. You know, when we talk, I know the city, December 1st, is the official start date, and Mr. Hirschhorn and I know a lot of others talk about taking over all services as of that date, but that's not, as I understand it, we pay the cab through December 31st. So for all intents and purposes, we
that's true.
Those thing. Services.
The cab, we have paid the cab, and the cab has agreed that we have paid for all services through the December 31st of this year.
Okay.
May I just offer one more comment?
Absolutely.
On the podium? The situation and your counsel who's assisting your city attorney could correct me if I'm wrong, but in the Fulton County cities, the situation was similar. They had also paid through December 31st. It was the position of each of those cities for various degrees of service in each of the functional areas that I mentioned, that we be ready to perform the service for them because, at least in Fulton County, they weren't sure of the ability of Fulton County when it was known that they were taking over to actually provide those services. It has nothing to do with enthusiasm
sure.
or the politics that people have mentioned. It's simply, we're taking over public works and they're reducing their public works service. What happens if there are storms in December and you need service? And so, we were ready to go on December 1st. There were various intergovernmental IGAs that had us on behalf of the city taking over different departments at different times, but we needed to be ready to go on December 1st in case the county had just decided not to work with them at all.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification. And thank you for the time. Okay. Senator Weber? Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Councilman?
Yeah. I just want to let you know, I work for all of you, and I came in at 7 o'clock tonight. These meetings were originally scheduled for Monday and Wednesday, but to accommodate Councilman Wittenstein, we moved them to Sunday and Wednesday. And I was out of town, and I agreed to come back today, and the schedule was changed from 6:30 to 7 to accommodate that so I could fly back today. I cut my schedule one day short to come back. So I'm not looking for excuses. I don't give excuses to anything or anybody. But that is the reason why I showed up at 7 o'clock tonight and not 6:30. And I think I'd like to poll the council members around here and ask them if anybody else remembers that we moved the meeting to 7 o'clock last Monday night or Tuesday night after our meeting that we talked about at the mayor's house.
I can address that if I can.
Sure.
We scheduled the Monday night meetings that are going to be ongoing are going to be 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I think we kept this one still at 6:30 because it was not a work day. and it changed that to 7 o'clock on Monday so people could actually get there easier, so the ongoing ones are on board. The Monday night, second and fourth weekends, second and fourth Mondays are going to be 7, but this one I do believe will still be 6.
Well, nevertheless, it's, Councilman, duly noted as not your fault. I do remember the conversation that you were going to be at
1:30 in the morning or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we're just starting out and everything, but I just want to let you know, the citizens, that I show up on time. And, you know, I flew in a day early from my schedule to make it here at 7 o'clock, and that was what was scheduled, and that was what was agreed upon, and here I am. So
we believe you.
Thank you. Okay, Senator Weber.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Let me say first, it warms my heart to see you here tonight. It really does. And I look forward to either Adrian or Larry joining you in a couple of weeks. And we're off and running, so it's a good thing. I'm going to try to spend about 10 minutes explaining a spreadsheet that I brought with me tonight. And then I'm going to ask Don Boykin to share some comments with you about an idea that we have for implementation of the hybrid model. With that, I would like to pass this out to each of you. Yesterday, I attempted to meet with everybody on the council before tonight. I succeeded in meeting with 3 of you. Logistics didn't allow me to meet with the others. This is a revised version of what I presented to those 3 yesterday. Got a total of 12 copies.
Damn.
Me too. Okay. All right. I think you can share. I wanted to give one to Larry also. Let me say first that what I've given to you is a 5-page document. The last 3 pages of this document are a spreadsheet that you generated last Tuesday night in a work session, I understand it went until 1 a.m., projected revenues and projected expenses. The middle document, the 3rd document, is a summary of a salary survey that's done by the Department of Community Affairs each year from cities around Georgia, looking at 4 cities in the metro area that might be comparable to Dunwoody: Marietta, Alpharetta, Decatur, and Roswell. And I'll explain in a minute why that's relevant. So the first 2 pages are the master spreadsheet for the hybrid model. This is something that we've been emailing around among us. And when I say us, I mean the team that we assembled. About 5 weeks ago, I believe it was, we had a meeting in the mayor's office. It was a small group where the results of the RFP proposal were first presented. It was determined that there might be several $1 million shortfall, which caused some concern on my part. So I tried to assemble a team going forward to get to a point right now where we could propose an alternative to you for consideration. The team that we assembled, I hope, would be competent and credible. It included Brian Anderson and Deanne Hargis, both of whom have been on negotiating committee with Sandy Springs, Gordon Jackson, president of DHA, myself, Vicki Patton, who's co-chair of your finance task force, and Chief Gene Wilson. We undertook to put together a hybrid model, which is a term that Gordon Jackson came up with. And doing that, we've had some meetings with city officials. We met with Chamblee officials for about 4.5 hours, their mayor, assistant, or the city manager, the development director, the police chief, I think 1 or 2 other people. We had an all-day meeting in my law office where we met with the assistant city manager from Decatur, Pam Helton from Georgia Municipal Association, a former city administrator, Judy McCorkle, who came highly recommended to me by Pam Helton. Judy, until recently, was the finance director for the city of Statesboro. She's also the president of the Georgia Clerks Association, I believe is the term. So we had a meeting that day, and our objective was to try to put together staffing, working department by department, position by position with these city officials, put together staffing for the city of Benway, with the idea that a number of the services would be subcontracted out directly by the city employees, hence the name hybrid model. In doing that, what you have in front of you is the staffing that was constructed. This spreadsheet is the basis for the meeting we had, I guess it was a week ago, Thursday, where I did that PowerPoint. We were there for several hours. So you're going to be familiar with many of the concepts. I do want to try to walk you through this fairly quickly. The salaries that are used throughout this document are based on the third sheet. On the recommendation of those city officials, we went to the Department of Community Affairs. They have a survey for 2008 that's over 100 pages long. And each city identifies minimum salary and maximum salary range for each type of position. What is on the third page is what we extracted from that 100-page salary survey as it would apply to Dunwoody. There's a position that is on the first two pages that appears on the third page. So the numbers are carried forward to the first two pages. So we looked at these four cities, and we averaged the minimum data point and the maximum data point for each of the four cities. And that's what's in the last to the right. And the column that is entitled Average Max is the average maximum data point for the salary range. And in an effort to be conservative in our assumptions and knowing that these people, we want quality people, we use the maximum data point in the hybrid model in constructing the salaries. Okay? So that carries back to the front page. If you look with me at the front page at the headings for the various columns, the first column is the listing of the departments. Second column is headcount. Then there is the quarter, the fourth quarter 2008 budget with the 3 months identified, the 2008 salary, and then 2008 salary plus 35%. When I presented a week ago Thursday, I had 42%. I've heard 30%, I've heard 40%. I've been told 35% is still a little bit high, particularly if you use a defined contribution rather than defined benefit pension plan. 35% is probably more than adequate. If you see a position identified on the left and you see salary entered in a cell under one of the months, that's when the hybrid model contemplates that that person would begin working. The question we asked ourselves is, when is it essential, or what services have to be up and running on key dates? And what you'll find here is that the services are phased in based on the answer to that question. We believe that on January 1, the services that have to be in place are police and 911, which is going to have to be built from scratch or with an IGA, regardless of which model you use. Your finance and clerical functions for collecting revenues, and emergency public works in case a tree falls or there's a sinkhole, and some permitting functions need to be in place. So that's how this is constructed. The dollar amounts that do not have positions associated with them, obviously, are contracts for outside services. So you've got the Stormwater Fund, the Tourism Fund, and the objective here was to create an apples-to-apples with what you gentlemen did last Tuesday night. And we've continually updated this spreadsheet to try to create apples-to-apples, but the nature of the apple, our target apple, has changed as the negotiations have been ongoing with CH2. We think this is a fairly representative apples-to-apples comparison. The Development Department we viewed as a revenue-neutral department because the fees and so on that you collect have to be spent on development. This I call the Shamley model because it was based largely on the recommendation of the Development Director for Shamley, Dan Schultz, who is a member of this church. I didn't realize until I met him. We met with him twice. He said, look, I would suggest that we have three people in Shamley. Dunwoody probably needs to have a senior planner and a planner. So those two new positions are there. Other services like engineering, plan review, arborist, landscape, permit tech, building inspector are all subcontracted out by Shamley, and most of those are paid directly by the developer. It is possible the Development Department could spin off a profit in a sense that you could cover some of your overhead with your fees above and beyond your direct costs. Police department is $4,075,000. That's $15,000 off what you came up with last Tuesday. That's a standalone department. Chief Gene Wilson believes he can make it work with 33 officers, and that number will get you 33 officers. You will have to decide as a matter of policy where you want to set police. And then we get into general government, city manager, finance and administration, and so on. I did move legal counsel and outside legal counsel down to municipal court so you could see the numbers better for comparison purposes. Information technology, on the recommendation of Deanne Hargis, we took the GIS system, which was $100,000 per the task force report, and we made it $250,000. We beefed it up. We took outside IT support, which was $120,000 for the year, based on the recommendation of the city officials, and she said, why don't we triple that and make it $360,000? So we now have for IT a total of $970,000 for City Hall, plus for police, about another $250,000. Both the police IT startup and the City Hall IT startup have the software and equipment on a five-year lease. So it's about $1 million in expense, although more will actually be spent, about $1 million. Two or three will actually be spent on the equipment and so on. So facilities and miscellaneous costs, City Hall facilities at 22,000 square feet. We're finding out that may actually be too big, depending on how many employees you have. I added utilities of 60,000 just as a margin of safety this weekend. And public works and parks. Public Works and Parks has three employees. The logic there is you've got about $2 million worth of projects to manage. It's not that much. $250,000 for potholes, which is 1 week per month. Parks maintenance at $120,000. You've got to pay for your street lights. You've got to maintain your traffic signals. Those numbers come from the task force report. Capital expenditures of $500,000 in stormwater. $350,000 from the stormwater fund. We did add the phone system at $76,000, which I'm jumping back up again. City Hall has 40 employees times $5,000 each for furniture. Office supplies are at $10,000 a month, which compares favorably to the $2,000 a month that you gentlemen came up with last week. We have $200,000 in here for personnel recruitment, if you want to use search firms to locate your city manager and perhaps others. We kept the insurance at $450,000, and that's an explanation for that. One of the, so if you look on the next, there's a general fund subtotal that's about $10,500,000. That includes police. It does not include development, tourism, or stormwater. Okay? One of the criticisms of the hybrid approach was you don't have as many FTEs. Personally, I like that. I recommend that you start small, let your city manager make the business case to you that you need to add each position as you go forward, because this was constructed based on several experts working with us. We tried to be objective. We tried to be credible in doing this. We don't have an axe to grind either way, and I will tell you that I made a pledge to myself that I'd be done with this by October 1, so it's good you're having your meeting October 1. The way I viewed this was when you gentlemen were campaigning, the ball was not being moved down the field. I knew that you were going to be in a very compressed time frame here once you were elected to make a decision. My objective and the objective of our group is to kind of hand this off on you and say, here's an alternative playbook. We've tried to move the ball down the field. Take it if you want. Okay. But just to for the sake of discussion, I said, what if we add 15 employees to match what I'll call the CH2 budget? Put in $75,000 each because the average for all the other employees is $73,000. you mark it up 35%, you've got $1.5 million that you're adding to the general fund. Again, I would say let them make the business case for that. So the general fund without a contingency is $12,033,000. If you add in about a 3% contingency is what you have from last week, it's $12,458,000. The total of all your funds is $14,179,000. And then the full contingency on all funds is $500,000. Total budget all funds with contingency, $14,679,000. I put a table in here to illustrate the headcount and how it gets phased in. This model is based on the assumption that you would hire the city manager early for implementation purposes. We're going to discuss that more in detail, perhaps a deviation from that strategy. Police would have 33 officers plus 4 admins. Need to get the police chief in place, at least on a consulting basis, to start that work with an April 1 startup. Non-police employees now is about 40 with those 15 added. Anticipating October, you would have 3, November 6, December 1, 8. And I would agree that you have paid DeKalb County for all services through December 31. I think also a proper reading of that would be if you want to take over zoning and pay for those services December 1, you can do that. You can take it over. Legally, you can do that. But you don't have to. I think DeKalb is obligated to do that sort of thing through the end of the year. And I know Wendell Willard agrees with that. We met with him one Sunday afternoon about a month or so ago to talk with him about that. So on January 1, according to this model, you'd have about 19 people in place, February 1, the same. And then you would ramp up March 1 to 27. And maybe you would get to 40 if you see the need. If not, keep your costs low, keep the operation lean and mean. Some comparisons, if you look at the expense budget comparison for all funds, what you came up with last Tuesday was $17,671,000. What this comes up with is $14,679,000. That's a delta of $2,992, about $3 million. The general fund surplus for the hybrid model, general fund revenues from your analysis last week was $14,859,000. The total general fund expense with a proportionate share of contingency is $12,458,000, which we just looked at. That gives you a general fund surplus of $2.4 million. Georgia law does specifically require that your general fund balance. So you cannot excessively borrow from these other funds like stormwater and so on. If you look at the general fund deficit that you came up with, this is reflected in the last three sheets, you're at $667,000 deficit. I strongly recommend you give this serious consideration. What I see that has happened over the last 5 weeks, we started out with a several million dollar projected shortfall, and service levels have been reduced to a level that I believe are unacceptable in an effort to close that shortfall. And to illustrate that, we now have $500,000 in capital improvements when the anticipation was it would be $1.5 million. We have $120,000 for parks when we anticipated $400,000 to $500,000. We have a total of $250,000 for potholes for the year. For roads, when we anticipated for potholes and roads, we'd have $3.5 million. We have a 3% contingency, which is very little. The millage rate is at 2.74, which is what the same as what the county is charging now, but it is 0.7 mils higher than the 2.04 mils that was assumed in the studies. Personally, that troubles me. I can see in the first year maybe 2.74, and then I'd like to see it backed off. But you've got the 3.04 cap, so you're leaving about 0.3 mils to work with. 2010 doesn't get a lot better because in 2009, you've got 10 payments to CH2. In 2010, you've got 12 payments to CH2, which will be about another $1.7 million in your expense budget. There are also reasons to be concerned about the revenue projection. I don't mean this as a criticism, but there is some risk involved in that, particularly with the downturn in the economy. So please give that consideration. So that's an explanation of this spreadsheet. I hope it's helpful. I do want to allow some time for Don to come forward and speak with you about implementation. We had proceeded on the assumption that you could hire your city manager, finance director, police chief, and city attorney, and let them build your 19 employees before January 1. I understand that there's some concern about doing that, some uneasiness. Those of us who are in that working group have the advantage of having done this for 5 weeks. We sat with the city officials. We feel comfortable with this. I think I can speak for Brian, Gordon, and Deanne saying we're comfortable with this. But you're in the disadvantage of having a week or two to take in a heck of a lot of information. So I commend you for what you're trying to do. With that, I'll let Don come up and speak with you about what he...
Could we, before you do, Senator Weber, could
you have some questions?
Yeah, ask if there's any questions for Dan before.
Let me say a little bit about Don Boykin. I first got to know Don when my family and I were members of St. Luke's Presbyterian Church for a number of years. None of my work in DHA when Don was president here for 2 years or 3 years. Don's been in the DHA from 1989. Some of you know him better than I do. I know Don professionally also, given that I'm a construction attorney. I've had dealings with CH2. I've had dealings with Don's firm. I've had dealings with commercial and industrial contractors. That's what I do. I represent those people. He is currently on the Sandy Springs Planning Commission. He used to live in Dunwoody, Sandy Springs, Panhandle. Now he lives in Dunwoody, DeKalb. So with that, I'll let you take it forward.
But hold on.
Yes.
Hey, just one question.
Mm-hmm.
Price is a good thing.
Yes.
Figures are good.
Mm-hmm.
Quality of service is another thing.
Yes.
So we're looking at a balance between not only price,
mm-hmm.
but we're looking for quality of service.
Yes.
That's provided for that price.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the lowest bidder isn't always the best bidder.
Right.
And I guess that's my question to you. You know, they've got a proven record in 3 cities around us.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of know what quality comes with them. I think the unknown, the plan that I see here is, what is the quality that's going to come with the plan here?
Well, let me explain the idea of using Boykin International, which is Don's firm. He's an international firm. He's won international awards for his estimating and costing expertise. They do project management. They manage projects that have thousands of work activities successfully, compared to 300 or so that you might have here. Let me say that first. The purpose of using Don's firm is not to have a competitor to CH2, but to have him on an interim basis for 3 months, maybe 4 months, maybe 5 months, to hand off the services after you hire the city manager and start getting things in place with Don's assistance. The finance director, city attorney, and city manager could all be staffed on a consulting basis. You could do that under Boykin International, and he would coordinate that entire effort and make sure it's done correctly. So, for instance, he has in-house IT expertise. He has in-house human resources. So for a period of time, perhaps they could set it up and then transition immediately, or if you need some flexibility, they could maybe carry it for a month or two. As far as quality of service, after that transition is complete and Don's firm is out of the picture entirely, I would argue that in this area and in the city of Dunwoody, we have a tremendous talent pool. If you advertise and hire people from this area, you're going to get some really smart people. And you're going to have a great city hall. I personally believe in that very strongly. I personally like the idea of the citizens of Dunwoody paying $15, $17 million in taxes. I like seeing that money come back to the community. That's my personal view. I think you'll have a higher level of service. I think as a city council and your city manager will have better control, direct control over those employees, and accountability. And I think that's superior to the alternative. Just my personal opinion.
I've got one question, Senator Weber, and it's maybe a little naive, I'm not sure, but on some of the expenses on this side of it, when your task force was together getting some of these things together, are these from actual bids, or where do these come from? And I just picked potholes as one. That's $252,000, right?
All of the salaries come from the DCA survey, except for the city manager's salary. We set that at $170,000 because that was the highest data point of all the cities. Alpharetta pays $170,000, which is the highest. We wanted to set that high.
Okay. But the potholes, you're not, is this $252,000 saying you're going to hire?
Well, let me.
The Dunwoody people, there'd be a pothole maker in Dunwoody, or that contracted out?
Do you want to comment on that?
Go ahead.
Let me just walk you through Public Works as an example. Emergency maintenance is at $80,000. Deanne and Brian have been working with CH2. I believe that CH2 has in their budget substantially less than that, $10,000 for the year. Potholes, $252,000. We try to match the level of service to CH2, which is 1 week a month for the year.
Right.
That's about 60 or 62 crew days. And then we went to this task force that Councilman Hennigan shared, $4,000 a crew day for potholes. So you take 4,000 times, I think, 62 or whatever, 60, 62, and you get $252,000.
Okay. Well, fair enough. You can, that makes sense. So
you did
different based on
On a particular item.
Computations and
parks maintenance is at 120 because that's what CH2 has budgeted for parks maintenance. Electricity for street lights is 50,000 because that's what John's committee came up with as a net expense to the city after revenues. I think that's higher perhaps than what you have. I think you have 30,000 what came up last week. Maintenance of traffic signals, again, that was John's committee, 150,000. Capital expenditures match what you put in last week. It was higher than that. Stormwater projects is 350 because that's what CH2 is saying they would do in the first year. Every line item in this budget has a similar explanation. I'm happy to go through every one.
No, that's fair enough. But I mean, I think, you know, my thought is, you know, we are looking at fixed versus variable. We're the 252 might cover a week a month. Or by the time you bid it out, it could cover a week every 4 months. And I'm just playing both sides. We don't have any guarantee on those numbers, and that's, again, just a pro and con. And
yes, and I would say that that's entirely possible. On the flip side, I hope you don't spend $200,000 in personnel recruiting. I hope you don't spend $200,000 for furniture,
sure.
$5,000 per employee. $120,000 for office supplies. We just plugged that number in. The city official said $10,000 a month should be more than enough. Your own analysis has it at $2,000 a month, sure. $1,000 a month.
Fair enough. So there's pluses and minuses.
The phone system was Gordon Jackson meeting with a friend of his who's in that business and giving it some number for City Hall. So we've tried to do our research on a reasonable basis for each one, realizing there could be a downside or a potential upside.
I appreciate very much all the hard work as well.
Gordon did have a friend of his who's in IT also look over the IT budgets and kind of eyeball it and say it looks reasonable. Since then, we've added $390,000 to it, just to be sure.
All right, thank you.
Don, all yours.
I'm Don Boykin. Many of you may know me, some of you may not. As Dan mentioned, I've been a member of DHA since 1989 when we first got involved due to MARTA trying to put a rail line right through our city in some of the neighborhoods, as you may or may not remember. I've been a board member of the DHA managing the Fulton County zoning and have continued managing the Fulton County zoning and dealing with that even as after I've been appointed working with the Sandy Springs Planning Commission. And I've been there, I guess, 2.5 years now working with them. On the business side, I run a company called Boykin International. Barry Stein from my office here, he runs the Atlanta operations. for Boykin International. We are a project management firm. We manage projects and have managed projects on 6 continents in 53 countries and 40 states around the United States. We are considered an expert in dealing with troubled projects and turning projects around both quickly and efficiently. This is a key in that it takes a certain sense or a certain type of experience in order to insert yourself in a situation, start from initially ground zero, be able to come up with a work plan, immediately start the implementation of a work plan, and get things back on track. This is the type of thinking and process that we have for our clients, which I think could be a benefit to the city of Dunwoody simply because we are starting from scratch. We need to have an interim. And again, we are the interim people to help kickstart the city so that you can then take over the city with your own operations folks as you go forward. Some of the examples of what we have done, we create a resort on an uninhabited island on a remote location in the Caribbean. Those are the things that we get involved with, creating the infrastructure, the utilities, and putting all that in place. Housing people. We work, we've got one project down in the Turks and Caicos right now where we have 800 Chinese working for an Israeli contractor on a resort that we're building for Ritz-Carlton. These are the types of things that we get involved with. I have brought some packages today, and these are not tailored for the city of Dunwoody. These are the ones that we have on our shelf today that I just picked up. One of them is deals with our medical facilities, where we work with medical facilities throughout the United States and also overseas. And then the two others are our hospitality, which deals with some of the resorts. You'll be able to go through, I think it's section 3, and you'll see some of the types of projects we get involved with. These projects are hundreds of millions of dollars of which the clients, just as yourself, rely and trust us to put the project management teams in place in order to implement their program and their way they want to go forward. Cities we have worked with over the years, City of Savannah has ongoing work with the City of Savannah. Any of you have been to the City of Savannah recently, the big parking structure that has been built four or five decks below grade, and now we're about to open it next week, in essence was our project managing it for the City of Savannah. We're now going to put a park on top of it, as well as the different office buildings and hotels that are around it. Those are a part of what we have managed for the City of Savannah. We work with the City of Decatur in doing a lot of their parks program and helping them with their parks program and implementing what they want to accomplish with that. Douglasville, Spartanburg, Orlando, Houston, working with the City of Atlanta, and again, the City of Sandy Springs is where I've been personally working with, and also the City of Alpharetta are some of the other cities that we have worked with over the years. So the resources that we have available for the city of Dunwoody is that we are experienced with city development and how things work. We have an understanding of how to work with cities, some of the sensitivities, as it was shared before, where our place is. We're implementers of your vision and putting things together. We have an IT staff that is really ready, willing, and able to put your IT systems in place. On these remote islands, we put together IT systems for our staff. For our clients, tying all the systems together for our different offices. All of them are linked. All of them are readily available. Not so much public access because we're not making things public, but that's not something that our fellow who runs our IT group is not familiar with. We call him Major Tom. He used to be a major in the Army working on the Katrina relief done by the Corps of Engineers prior to him coming to work for us. We also have an HR staff available to help find the right people and put them in place. This is a key resource in the first 3 months of what's needed in order to put these people in place. Hire them, sifting through, finding the right people. We have the connections, we have the process that we go through, the background checks, psychological profiles, if that's what is also needed. We do that for our clients or for our people. These are some of the things that you go through in hiring people to make sure they're fit. They fit not only with the culture that you want to create, but they also, there's no hidden things in the background that you need to find out about before you put them on your staff. Temporary office space, our headquarters is located here in Atlanta. We're at the intersection of 400 and Northridge. We have space for the interim for 3 months for fellows to be, for people to be located right in our offices to work with our people, so there's a nucleus of people. There's also additional space in the building that we can use and have readily available until your space is built out. We can help you design and build your space out so that you're dealing with and processing and operating as a full-blown city as quickly as possible. There are a number of opportunities where to do this, whether it's in the village or some other place that you may choose, however you want to lay out your city. And we're ready to start. Some of the initial pieces that we see, the initial actions that we would take on, these would all be things in the first 2 weeks. One is to develop a master schedule on how this all gets implemented. Validate your budget. The budget that hybrid budget that has been proposed here needs to be validated by another set of parties to make sure that if there are unusual signs or there are things that need to be taken care of, or if there are gaps or overages doubling up, those things can be defined very quickly and known very quickly so that you can deal with them. Establish a process to capture your revenue. One of the things that is vital to any company or any turnaround project is making sure you got cash and making sure you got the revenue. And that is one of the things, if you have established your budget where that revenue is going to come from, that's one of the things in the overall budget that needs to be established, and then start the process on how you go about collecting it as of December 1. There are also certain grants that are available that I understand this grant from the state legislature that Dan shared with me that's available, as well as any other grants that may have to be surfaced that we could apply for and hopefully collect. One of the things that we do on any project we start out with is a project management plan. It goes by many different names, but essentially it gets the stakeholders in the room together to define what your goals and objectives are, how quickly and what you want to accomplish, and then we put together a plan on how to implement it. So we're not doing this in a vacuum. We're doing this as an extension of you, the city council, as well as the mayor, making sure we're accomplishing what you want to accomplish in this interim period, where we're effectively making, becoming the city and making it work for you. We also have in-house attorneys where we can help you with drafting consulting agreements or drafting agreements with different vendors that you may have. One of the things that, speaking with Dan yesterday, one of the things I recommend to him is that there are a number of folks that are preliminarily identified. That is, we want to get somebody as a police chief identified, but instead of making a commitment right away to somebody, we would put them on a retainer or type of contract. Where it's a monthly contract where when you ultimately do have the city manager in place, he is the one that actually signs off on this person being the chief of police, and or if you have a pool of several others, the city manager can pick the person that they would prefer to have. But you have this contract employee that is now pulling together the police staff and organizing the police. We think that that's a key in order for you to achieve an April 1st turnover for the police. You need to start them very quickly. And this is a method on how to achieve that. Similarly, there is a resource been named or identified as potential finance director. We would recommend that you do a contract employment agreement with them as well. And so when the ultimate city manager is hired, whether it's 6 weeks, 8 weeks out, that person then can sign off on that person if that's who they're comfortable with. If they're not comfortable with, then it's very easy for you to just terminate that contract and move along with whoever they do select. These are ways that you maintain as a city council and mayor the greatest flexibility in moving forward with the city, as well as there's a comfort level of these consultants that are coming on that they know what their contract is for and that there is a decision date that will be up in the future. There's also an insurance process that needs to be decided on how you're going to insure both the city as well as you as council members, as well as any of the other city workers, how you're going to develop your benefit programs and so forth. We have contacts that we would pull in, both from the insurance side as well as development, crafting the development programs with our HR staff on how you want to pull together the benefit packages for your employees. And effectively, what we're trying to do is start and give you the opportunity to craft and pull together a city and to be able to turn it over. We effectively will be working ourselves out of a job. That's our focus. Is at the end of 3 months, 4 months, or potentially as long as 6 months, we'll be working ourselves out of a job all the way through. The idea is turning it over to the employees that you hire as a staff, getting them the right training, and so that they're ready to go forward as your staff members. I would leave it open for other questions of how this might be attacked or something more specific I can touch on. Those are sort of the general overview.
Don't work on what fee structure would you guys have?
It's an interesting question. We would base the fees on an hourly reimbursement rate with a not to exceed. We anticipate for the October through the end of December period it would be roughly about $250,000 plus any expenses. We don't anticipate to be a significant amount of expenses unless you ask us to do that. One of the expenses we would have would be if you want to run the consultants, meaning the police chief, the finance director, through our firm so that we're managing them, or you want to pay them directly either way. If they're run through our firm, since we're going to wind up paying them and then ultimately getting the money back from you, there's a markup on that. If you're going to pay them direct, you can pay them direct. Either way, they can be managed by us. Our job is just really to work. You know, when Dan asked me if we could help, I've been looking for ways that I can help in the city of Dunwoody. This became an opportunity, and we'd like to be able to do that. We would figure our billing rates at a discount. It's roughly about a 10% discount. In my case, it's more than that.
I've got a couple of other concerns. Cost was one that I had identified as well. The two biggest, though, to me, are calendar and capital. So let's talk about both of those. One of the things that CH Student Help brings to the table is that they really started this process months ago. And they already are, I mean, they're you know, they've got people lined up, they've got processes, they've got procedures. They've got folks who are already trained in doing this stuff. My main concern with the build it ourselves approach that Dan is suggesting is, do we have the time? You know, we're talking about 90 days.
Yeah.
And in 90 days, we're going to be responsible for providing an awful lot of services. And there are an enormous number of moving parts. I have no question that we could implement this given enough time. My concern is, do we have the time?
I'm here to help you as an alternate. I'm not going to say that I've got a better solution than what C.H. Stonehill has. All I can tell you is my track record. I designed and built $58 million worth of work in 7.5 months on a remote island in the Caribbean, importing materials from all over the world. It's a feat unheard of before we did it, and it's unmatched since. It's the same type of mentality, the same type of stick-to-itiveness, it's the same type of planning that you make stuff happen. We can do it. We've done it. Our track record is that we've been doing it. So the answer to the question is, I believe we can, and we've shown that we can in other projects and other places. It's not to take anything away from CH2ML. They've been working on this for quite a while. They've been there and done that. There are certain things that we're going to be doing a lot of research with a lot of our surrounding cities and gathering best practices from every one of those cities in order to bring back to you to make sure that it's all part of what you want to accomplish and how you're going to accomplish it. You're going to have glitches. I don't deny that. Anytime you start up, you're also going to have glitches with CH2ML. We all know that. Having been part of the city of Sandy Springs, I've been part of those and observed some of those glitches. CH2ML is a good firm. What we're offering and what Dan is offering is a way for you to at least be below your revenue stream in the first year, which unfortunately has not been the case that it's been. It's just an alternate proposal on what you can do it. And that's what it is.
And the other thing is capital, right? The other thing that CH2ML brings is the ability to spend a fair amount of money up front without us getting billed yet, right? I mean, and there's you know, for those of us who see that our revenue stream is going to be very slow to build, how would you propose in this arrangement that I mean, I don't know how big Boykin International is. CH2M Hill is big enough to do that. You know what I mean? And
CH2M Hill does
$5 billion.
$5 billion of revenue. We're nowhere near that.
Yeah, right.
We manage over $5 billion worth of construction every year. We are in the top 40 program managers and construction managers in the United States each and every year. We're ranked there. We're not the size of CH2M Hill, but we're not small guys either. As far as bringing capital and resources, they're going to bring you capital, you're going to pay for the interest on it. If we have to bring you capital, you'll pay for the interest from it for us as well. It's both that way. In January 1, we'll help you set up with different banks, finding and securing your loan because you're going to need a line of credit in order to smooth out your revenue. And sign it up on January 1st. It can all be put in place before then. And so effectively, your shortage of capital is up through the end of the year. And then after that, we can work with your cash management to make sure that you're balanced and you're managing your cash. That's just part of doing business. They're an advantage. They're not going to bill you for the first 2 months. That's an advantage. But you're also going to wind up paying it 2 months later after you. It's like borrowing money. You borrow 2 months of money from them or roughly $1.5 million based on what I saw on the cash flow that you guys got worked out. So it's borrowing from one pocket, putting it in the other. It's really how you want to attack it.
I've got a comment, not a question. I've known Don for over 20 years. And it's just almost serendipitous that his name came up here, because if there's one man in the community, one of the concerns that I've had, if you've attended any of the other forums, you've heard me express this openly, we didn't have an alternative to CH2M Hill. And in business, I like to have alternatives. And quite frankly, I was not satisfied that we could implement a plan that Dan had worked a long time and very hard on with several very smart people. I wasn't sure that seven people just sworn into the council could implement that plan until Don Boykin's name came forward. Don is a uniquely qualified person. He lives in the community. He's shown his loyalty to the community, both his work at DHA. He's served on boards of Dunwoody Country Club. He's served on the planning boards at Sandy Springs. This is not a new endeavor for him, and quite frankly, it's a fairly small endeavor as it relates to projects that he's had responsibility for managing. If I had one concern, and unfortunately I wasn't here on Tuesday night when we discussed the budget, we have a $500,000 reserve in our budget as it stands now, and we're still coming up $600,000 short in cash. We need to find ways to run this city and run this city on an effective basis without having to come to you to ask for more money. And that's what we all committed to, and everybody around this table, I'm going to hold their feet to the fire, that we will have no tax increases during this time. And we need to make sure that we do that. I think in today's economic situation, a $500,000 budget, contingency or reserve fund, that's minuscule based on the situation we have in our economy today. We ought to have a 10% reserve fund in there. If I were running a business, that's what I would have in a startup. And I've started over 30 companies in my day. We are running on a very, very short fuse here in terms of the amount of money that we have to operate on. And the economy, as it was expressed by one of the candidates the other night in a debate, we're not at the end of the beginning. The beginning of the end. We're at the beginning of this whole process. Okay? And he had the same problem in saying that I just did, but nevertheless, I think this is a realistic proposal we have to look at here. We have to look at it seriously, because it does provide us $2.9 million potentially. And I don't believe the $2.9 million. Quite frankly, if we could come out with $1 million, I'd be real happy on this. But if you look at the $1 million, that's a million nine that we have to play with here versus what we have with other proposals. And I think it's something this council has to give serious consideration to. I trust this man. I've seen him operate. And I've talked to business leaders since I have heard of his involvement and the possible involvement in this thing. And they say to me, there's one person in the community, if his name were to come up, that I would trust with this project, and you're looking at it.
That's fair enough. Any other
I don't have any stock in this company either.
Well, I was going to ask a question. Does anybody on the council have any business relationships or financial relationships with this kind of company?
Neither do either one of the candidates for the post vacant.
Any other questions, comment?
Going forth with your fees after December 31st, and what is your fee structure if we have to stretch this out? How would that be based?
Again, it would be on an hourly basis going forward, and only be filling in the positions that you need or the staff that you need to have until the people in place. I anticipate that the largest amount of time that's going to be needed will wind up being in the first month or two, and that is until the city manager is involved, and then we start turning over a lot of the functions and management issues to the city manager that is found and hired. And then that essentially will be supporting them and supporting the rest of the staff that you have. And as you hire each of the individuals and put them on your own staff, we just go away. That's how this thing has been crafted and designed. It's the idea is to work ourselves out of a job. In effect, you know, what our hope would be is that at some point in time, if you have another spot need, you might consider us in the future, but there's no commitment we're looking for on the front end.
Any other questions? Don, is your fees structure in this document?
I believe if you take the first 90 days, fees are about that amount, less the city attorney.
I didn't see that it was in here.
No, it's not.
It's not in here.
No, it's not. You've identified in that document a city manager, you've identified in that document administrative health, you've identified other things that you'd be paying for.
Gotcha. Right.
In that. Maybe not the same for the same amounts. Where these people would be full time, our people would be a portion of the time making sure that we got the best for your money.
There would be some of the fees that are phased in starting October 1 in this document probably would go away and would offset to some degree the charges of working in some of the magnitude of the deal, which is a lot. It might be tens of thousands of dollars.
For instance, the temporary rent that you have.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Baker.
All right. So I mentioned at the beginning, we've agreed to alter the agenda. We're going to skip down to discussion of our proposed regular city council meeting. And Robert, I'll ask you to speak. You've been working with Paige Olson, if you could...
We don't have a city hall yet, and we need a place to meet. There are lots of places, and this church has been very generous with its space over the last several years. But I think the goal was to find a spot that we could have not have to worry too much about scheduling, have a relatively neutral location, and we worked with. Crawford Lewis and the DeKalb County Board of Education, they've now agreed to let us use the schools as a regular meeting place. We had tried to use the schools as before the election for some public forums, and they had been hostile. We came back to them now as a government And they basically said, well, it's a government, of course. So they've agreed to let us use the schools. They've suggested Peachtree Middle, since it's a relatively new facility. It's very nice. It was designed in part with community meetings in mind. We've talked about doing regular meetings on Monday, on the second and fourth Mondays of each month.
Chapter 2, Section 1.
At 7 o'clock with Peachtree Middle as the primary location. And we've also discussed having work sessions on the Monday evening between the two regular scheduled meetings. So basically meet the second, third, and fourth Mondays of each week at Peachtree Middle. They've also agreed to waive the standard usage fee. So that was $75 per week, which they've waived, although they told us if their custodial help has to work overtime, they want to bill us for the amount of the overtime, just so they don't incur an out-of-pocket expense. So I'm pleased by that. We weren't sure they'd be cooperative, but in fact, from Crawford Lewis all the way down the line, everybody's bent over backwards to say yes in about a 24-hour period, which is remarkable for the DeKalb Board of Education.
Okay, so just to make it clear, the work session for this council is second and third and fourth Monday.
Second, third, and fourth Monday at 7 o'clock. Now, we are planning a Wednesday, October 1st meeting as our first official meeting. And we've also got the school for that meeting as well. So we'll meet on Wednesday of this week at 7 o'clock. Then going forward, we'll meet on the second and fourth Mondays for regular meetings and the third Monday for work sessions. Questions, comments?
Is the high school also available because it is a more central location in the city?
I believe that it is. The high school has a little more scheduling issues. There's more extracurricular and evening activities because there's more clubs and a lot of the kids drive so they can do stuff. There seemed to be a sense that at the middle school, they almost never use it in the evenings. And at the high school, they have some evening sports activities and stuff. That there might be more conflicts at night, but they were amenable to us using either facility.
That's our backup location.
I'm not thinking of us. We can make anywhere but the citizenry, more central location might be more palatable to the folks.
I'm personally indifferent.
Okay, any other thoughts? All right, so that's it for now.
I think Peachtree being newer, cleaner.
Next time, that's that because I'm at the wrong school, so let's go to Peachtree and go to school.
I can walk.
Just everybody should know that the next meeting is October 1st, 7 p.m. Peachtree Middle.
Okay, with that, I will open up for public comment, and afterwards we're going to break for what's called executive session. And that's basically a private meeting where we're going to discuss some personnel issues, which is within our obligations to do that in an executive session. So to allow everybody to leave, instead of breaking now for the executive session, I thought let's go ahead and do public comment and move forward. Fred, yes, we will bring you an executive session. So if you can wait. In fact, let's start off. Let me ask counsel for some opinions. We do have Fred Brandt who wants to speak in regards to what we'll be talking about on the personnel side of it. Do you have a preference if we want to hear that now or in executive session?
Let's do an executive session so we can have the interaction.
Okay. Are you okay?
I'd like to make just a couple statements.
Oh, yeah.
Your input?
No. Proposals should be made
public.
Right.
Whatever.
And then we should discuss particulars about the proposal.
Okay.
Okay, fair enough. Well, Mr. Grant, you're on stage.
Waited patiently.
Got the stuff for you.
My name is Fred Brand, and I'm a person who has been on the executive committee for the Citizens for Dunwoody off and on for the past 3 years. I requested a bit of time this evening to discuss in public the involvement of Mr. Oliver Porter and what that's meant to this effort. I'm also here to discharge a responsibility that the executive committee has to Mr. Porter, something that the executive committee agreed to do along the way as we worked with Mr. Porter. I'm not going to read the entire document here, and I'd like to have it incorporated at your discretion in the minutes, however. Excuse me. But I will summarize some of the points in this so we can discuss it in later. Mr. Porter's involvement began shortly after the city of Sandy Springs was formed at the request of Dan Weber. And there were early meetings with a small number of people, many of whom are in the room here, in which Mr. Porter was the leading advocate and character for positioning our effort. We, as a group, decided that we would offer to compensate Mr. Porter at the rate of $2,000 a month at the early stage. And after 4 months, he had drawn $4,000 payment for 2 months. And that money was paid out of money that was collected from private individuals to subsidize the efforts that we were making for the city. So no public money of any kind was involved, no corporate money. After 4 months, it became evident that we were going to be unsuccessful in our first attempt at the legislative level. And so Mr. Porter voluntarily terminated the agreement and nevertheless, at the same time, offered his continuing services to at, by that time, become the Citizens for Dunwoody organization. For the next 2.5 years, everybody here knows the contributions that Oliver made. He was instrumental at the legislative level. He was certainly somebody who was highly cognizant of whatever we needed to do strategically to move the ball down the field and to prepare us for this first meeting. Furthermore, Oliver continued to operate at the discretion of the Citizens for Dunwoody, and the agreement that was reached ultimately became that he was willing to take no money during the time before the city was actually arrived at, but that he requested of Citizens for Dunwoody that at the time that the council was seated, that we would make a recommendation to the council to pay him what amounted to $54,000, which was expected at $9,000 a month for 6 months. So that's the way we came up with that number. Previous to reaching that agreement, and prior to this time, the idea was that we were going to pay him $108,000, and that would be covering 12 months of his efforts prior to the actual realization of the city. Voluntarily, Oliver cut that back down to 6 months and $54,000. And I want the public to know that at no time was Oliver thinking, or did he express the view that he was owed this money? It was always going to be at the discretion of the council once it was seated. So this is a man working for nothing and devoting as much or more time as anybody in this room to this effort. So therefore, I am formally asking the city council to recognize and consider compensation of Mr. Porter for services already rendered at $54,000, and that that amount be paid to him in 2009, half in January and then half in April. In your document, I also refer to an ongoing role that Mr. Porter might be considered to have. And I want to make it clear that I'm no longer speaking at this point for the Executive Committee for Citizens for Dunwoody. I'm merely giving you what Mr. Porter has advised me that he would be willing to do. And since he's sitting right here, if I get it wrong, Oliver, you can tell me. Oliver's played this role of consultant and interim or acting city manager for the Sandy Springs City and certainly consulted with several other cities. In fact, he's consulting internationally at this time in Japan, so that's kind of interesting. His agreement or his suggestion is that he be put into the role of interim city manager or acting city manager and finance director for a period of up to 6 months, starting in October and going through March, at no additional compensation to the $54,000. to me, that's a very generous offer. The only contingency would be, of course, that there would have to be mutual agreement between Mr. Porter and the council as to exactly what his job responsibilities would be. And so here, in summary, you have an opportunity to bring a man who has had considerable experience starting up cities to work for you at no additional cost beyond what he's already done. A very generous offer, in my opinion. The third page of the document that I brought to you is a listing of some of the things Oliver has already done and some of the things he is ready to do on behalf of the city. And so much of this he has had experience with before, maybe all of it. He's perfectly able and willing to discuss it further with the council as you deem appropriate. So those are my comments.
I'd like to offer you an opportunity to rephrase something.
Okay.
I don't think we can legally pay Oliver for work he has already done. So we aren't contemplating giving him $54,000 for the help he provided previously. I think if I give you the opportunity to rephrase that, what we're looking at is bringing him on as a consultant for services yet to be provided.
Exactly.
And that we can and is appropriate to do.
Thank you, Robert.
Okay.
May I be allowed to speak on that? And Robert is absolutely correct. I never asked him.
Yes, right. And it wasn't part of any of the discussions.
The citizens of Dunwoody made was that should the council decide that they could use my services on a going forward basis, then that's what you'd be compensating me for. And what I have said is, it's a part of the consulting role. I could do the same thing that I did for Sandy Springs, basically, which is serve as interim city manager, finance director, and so forth. So it is on a going forward basis, not any compensation for any services I've rendered to you all in 2.5 years.
In conclusion, I'd like to make one other comment, and it seems very relevant because we've heard discussions about the role of city manager, and since I'm the acting director of the task force for finding the city manager and others, I want to caution the council that we are at a stage where we are just beginning to interview people. We have employed a nationally recognized search firm to bring candidates to us. Very few, if any, of these candidates, even though we specified we wanted people with startup experience. Very few, if any of them, have that startup experience because there are not that many of those people available. I've been an executive recruiter for 15 years, and I know that at this level, you can go all the way through the process. You can find your ideal candidate. You can negotiate. You can move that person. You can get all the way to the end and find out that they're not going to take the job. It happens all the time. I don't want the council to have any illusions that it's a matter of just plugging in the next person into this role. You have to find the right person that's a key person that's going to influence the development of the city dramatically, whichever model is chosen. And so I caution you that this could take a while.
I would just like to add a comment onto Robert's, because as you were talking there, and because I think one of the things that makes that very relevant is that during these entire process of building up the city, you know, Oliver, of course, name came up, and it was well known, at least in my circles and in what I heard, that he was operating without compensation. So I think that makes the compensation factor even more important, because of the trust and confidence of the citizenry of Denley.
All right, thank you, Mr. Brand. All right, with that, we're going to do public comment. 9:10, we'll do 30 minutes, Council. Is that, or do you want to open
sure.
it up for
3 minutes each?
Okay. Let's see. Mr. Anderson, do you have a sign-up list or anything?
We didn't have a sign-up list.
Okay, well, I guess everybody can maybe fight each other at the podium. Might be the next best step. Mr. Lunson, you're closest, so...
And biggest strike.
I'd like to caution everyone,
we're
going to limit to 3 minutes, I believe.
That's correct.
Can you monitor that?
Thank you.
I came in, I heard Mr. Wittenstein. I was chair of the task force of the zoning and planning, and one of the issues that got the city started was zoning and planning and variances and the development of Perimeter Center and the rest of Dunley. I would urge you to strongly reconsider what Mr. Wittenstein said. The crux of a good planning commission and the crux of a good board of appeals is political independence. Each of you appoint a commissioner to any of those boards, the board of appeals, the planning commission, along those lines. You're going to appoint somebody that you know, somebody you trust, somebody you think has the knowledge and the background and the experience. But what you owe to the public is the independence of those board members. So they do not serve at the pleasure of the council or the mayor. In the event that the planning commissioner, with his experience, background, and the reason you put him in that job, is at odds with what you want to do, I would suggest to you that if you disagree with your planning commissioner, or you disagree with the Board of Appeals member, that your right to override your planning commissioner or Board of Appeals member is your final vote. But I think this city was born on the independence of those commissions. The two things that have done the best work for the city of Dunwoody in DeKalb County have been the Board of Appeals and the Planning Commission, because they're the ones who bring reason to the discussion. So I would urge you very, and I know it's nice to have the President of the United States and his cabinet serves at the pleasure of the President, that type of thing. This is far different. You have the final vote to overrule what your Planning Commissioner or what that Planning Commissioner board said. And they should not be in fear, not that I don't think anybody here is really too intimidating, but they should not be in fear, they should not be in fear that they're going to make a statement publicly in opposition to a project or acceptance of a project and then worry about getting a phone call the next day that Mr. Wittenstein's not satisfied with Mr. Smith and he talks to the mayor and city council and they oust Mr. Smith. Because I think what you'll do is you'll hamper that free thought, you will hamper that independent study, and I think that would be a detriment to the city as we move forward.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, Robert.
Yeah. Do you serve at the pleasure of Elaine? I mean, what's the relationship between the DeKalb County Planning Commission and Board of Appeals and the County Commission?
DeKalb County Board of Commissioners and the Planning Commission and the Board of Appeals do not serve at the pleasure.
Okay.
The only way that I can be removed I serve on the DeKalb County Board of Appeals, for the record. If the only way that I can be removed from District 1 seat on the Board of Appeals is to be ousted by my fellow commissioners.
Oh, okay.
Now, the county can remove me if I've done something wrong, if I've broken a law, if I've taken a bribe. I haven't even got my lawn cut, which is a problem. But if there's due cause, if there's due cause, then I think the mayor and the council has a right to sit back if I violated some public trust. And I would leave that to the county attorney, whoever the acting county attorney is going to be, to write that in clear. That is. But until then, the only way you can get a member off the board is to have that board member voted off by the board.
Voted off,
yeah. One point of clarification.
And they tried, and they haven't been successful.
is that an annual appointment, or?
It serves as the term of the commissioner.
Okay.
So it's 4 years term. But you could change that as well. I mean, that's up to you. I think in the term while they're sitting in their seats, they should not be at the risk of setting Mr. Ross, and Mr. Ross throws off his planning commissioner or his Board of Appeals member. That's not what you're putting him there for. You're putting him there to independently review projects and make decisions and make those recommendations to you.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Lundston. Was that 3 minutes, Mr. Anderson?
Well,
I asked a question, right.
I thought the council could go on.
That's the fair enough. I was just harassing you. Okay, again,
this will be quick. I have a question of Mr. Firstcorn, of your presentation regarding maintenance and things that you said. In regards to sidewalks that are in need of repair, big cracks in them, or et cetera.
Let me ask procedural from Mr. Anderson on appropriateness of asking an audience member a question.
Well, I could ask it here. Should I redress it?
Mr. Anderson, can you give us advice?
This would be a public comment period, and they're making their comments directed to you.
Okay.
And after, if he makes the comments, then later on, if you desire to make inquiries for the next meeting or another place like that, this is basically your opportunity to tell them what you think.
Thank you. I've never done this before. So I would just ask you to, in your due diligence, as a matter of record, please make sure that just as potholes are maintenance and things like that, that things that comply with ADA ramps requirements and obviously badly broken sidewalks that have not been addressed by the county is in the area of maintenance and not would be considered capital expenditures.
Thank you, Mr. Crane. Someone might come up that I don't know, but not yet.
I'm going to be even briefer. I want to thank you all for serving our community and being the first to do so, and I wish you much luck and wisdom.
Thank you. Suck that one in and enjoy it. Does anybody, Mr. Davida?
Yes, I just want to... I want to thank you all for serving as well. I've worked with a number of you over the past 3 years, and I know you have a lot of hard decisions ahead of you. Just want to let you know that I decided to continue on with the outreach efforts and addressing the business community. I feel the job wasn't done until we were able to unify the business community as a central part of our community. I just want to offer the services of the local Dunwoody Chamber of Commerce and any assistance that you need, any projects that you need help with, the research or any information. You just feel free to give any of us a call. In addition, we're going to be leasing the 5518 property on Chamblee Dunwoody Road. That's the old railroad section house. One of the things that we're considering is opening up an information center or a visitor center for Dunwoody. So if the city council has any information that they want to get out to the public, if you want to direct phone calls, I know you have a lot to do. So any help that the Chamber of Commerce can offer with getting information out to the public, I just want to offer that up to you guys.
Great. Thank you. Great choice. Yes, sir.
Thanks, Charles Collins, and I'm a resident of Dunwoody, Charles Collins. So, trying to help you do that. I have substantial experience in public service. I was a senior budget manager for Fairfax County, Virginia for 14 years, and I've also got startup experience in a venture-backed company, .com, here in Atlanta. That's what brought my family from Fairfax to here. And what I would offer in terms of wisdom from my own experiences and my knowledge of public services, in looking at the services that we've got to offer, especially with respect to the police force on one side and these services we've talked about from a contracting standpoint, what you're going to need to do is look at, well, what are the risks that we've got to manage for the period of the build your own versus contract immediately, and ask yourselves, on the high risk side, police services naturally being the highest risk, we're going to have to build our own anyway. Mm-hmm. We're not looking, no one's discussed contracting that at all. And on the other side, parse those out and look at each one of those services. I haven't been on all of the task forces. I've been trying to pour through them, and thank you, Councilman Hannigan, for posting all of those. It's been very beneficial for me. But looking through those and assessing, well, where are our immediate safety, public health, emergency needs, and addressing those and making sure we're covered on those, almost like an insurance or indemnification kind of policy. So that's where we invest our money. And we've got more time on the things that are lower risk. It's just the natural way of, sort of offering you a decision model for looking at those things based on my own experience. In a business, a startup, you've got the 80-20 rule at work. You can't get it all done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? All right. Wonderful. Well, with that, we're going to move into...
Yes, right. We need a majority of the council to decide to go into executive session.
Okay.
Right.
I thought we did that at the beginning.
Yeah, just to go into executive session, it requires a majority of the members of the board. Yes, right. That's right.
Well, I'll ask for a motion.
I make a motion.
I'll second.
Okay.
So Ross makes the motion. Witstein seconds.
All in favor.
So,
okay. Jordan's with there. That, we're going to go into executive session.
Good comment. I had no idea.
Guys, let's try to do a 5 minute, 25, clear the room.